We Have Issues is a weekly podcast full of reviews of comics and oversharing. We use grown-up language to make very childish jokes. You can find the show at wehaveissues.net, as well as anywhere else where average to not too bad podcasts can be found.
They've all realized
that they haven't done any of their damn work. Bastards.
Stewards. Oh, what's in the middle of the glass between us? It's like some sort of stones. Glass. Can you see that?
Glass stones. Oh, hang on, like a feature.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know if it's supposed to be a feature. I think it might just be an accidental one. I don't think the duct tape really adds to the feature.
I don't know. I don't like it, Jane.
It's odd. I feel a bit like you're observing me, and I'm going to get an electric shock, and then you're going to give me a puppy and then take it away from me. I mean, there's all these things that could happen, Nick.
Is that the sort of scientist you imagine me being?
Yeah, I imagine you being a Ghostbuster.
I don't know. I don't like the sound of that. That sounds cruel.
That's what Egon does in Ghostbusters 2.
The weird thing about Ghostbusters is you always think of them as quite, you know, they're kind of nice, they're heroes, and at the same time...
Well, they're not. Peter Bateman's an absolute...
Yeah.
A-hole,
isn't he? He is a dick. A complete dick.
He's a cad.
But, and the 80s doesn't seem like that long ago, but then you watch stuff from the 80s and you realize that, basically culture has changed so much since then that there are things that they do now that you would never see even a cad character doing in a PG
movie. No, absolutely not.
Are they testing on animals or just on people?
In that one, it's just on people, I think.
Oh, that's all right then.
It was just a little girl. Oh, and a married couple. So, yeah, just people.
Is he flirting with the woman in the married couple?
No.
I need to rewatch Ghostbusters. I think that's one of the films I need to rewatch. I'm doing lots of late night... this is one of those sentences you really don't want to get halfway through and then forget what you were going to say because it sounds really dodgy. I'm doing lots of late night binge watching of things because I'm spending the nights doing baby feeds. So, and I don't really need an excuse to stay up late, but it's weird for me to be stuck in front of the TV really late at night. Normally I'm on my computer. And so I've been using it as an opportunity to watch loads of stuff on Netflix.
So why are you not in front of your computer? Are you still
in the new layout of our house is very exciting. You need to come visit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The TV, the living room is in one place.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a converted garage right at the back of the house, which is where the computer and everything is.
So you've got your own little office almost.
Yeah, wow. But it's... It means that when the baby's downstairs in the living room, it's a bit cold to have the baby out there.
Yeah.
So the baby's in the living room, and sometimes I'll set up the monitor and go out there, but sometimes I just use it as an excuse to sit in front of Netflix and watch stuff. The first couple of weeks we were at the house, we didn't have the internet, and so I watched loads of DVDs, and there were just some DVDs that had been knocking around that I think we'd borrowed off people and then forgotten about. So there's a show called A Town Called Eureka, just been called Eureka.
Yeah.
So I watched the whole first season of that, and it's one of those things I don't think I'd have stuck it out if I had loads of choices of stuff to watch, but it was quite likable. It was quite fun. Everyone in it was doing a good job. It's about this guy who finds himself in this small town that's...
They're all geniuses.
Yeah, they're all... Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but yeah.
And it's... Which I'd have quite liked if it was just supposed to be a thing that had happened organically, Once Upon a Time is about this town where all of these fairy tale characters have ended up. And if it had sort of that all these geniuses had somehow ended up there because it was a commune, but it turns out it's actually like a government run thing.
Oh, okay.
which is a little bit less interesting, but it's, you know, it's quite a fun show. But so I watched all of that, and because when Noah was born, I watched all of Fringe. That's when I watched all of that.
I got through about an episode and a half of Fringe. It wasn't for me.
I got through the same episode and a half when it first came on, but I always kind of thought I heard people talking about it a lot, and the things they were saying about it seemed to be things I'd be quite interested in, and I did quite fancy the main lady.
Is it one of those power through kind of things?
Yeah, I think it is quite good, but it's just weird. It's quite nicely made, and everyone in it is really good, but actually it's more about experimenting with, they do so many weird things in that show that they just did, like weird, like in shows like The X-Files, they'd experiment with story structure and doing cute things with episodes. But in Fringe, they just do cute, like there'll be a whole, they introduce the idea of parallel realities in the first series. But it's, it gives you the impression it's going to be like The X-Files.
All right, so it has sort of each episode is themed in a certain way, but there's an overarching story.
Yeah.
It's all going to be a bit odd and out there.
Yeah. You feel like that's what it's going to be like in the first few episodes, because they give you the impression that it's going to be like The X-Files in that regard. There's going to be a different Monster of the Week sort of setup.
That could be where it lost my interest. I do love The X-Files, and I'm mixed feelings about there being a new series, but ultimately quite happy as a fan. So that could be where it lost. You know, especially when you intensely like a program or read a book, and you just try and fill that void, and you can never find anything, and anything that tries too hard, you're like, well, you're just trying way too hard. I'm not going to entertain this at all. I think maybe that could have been what I picked up from Fringe.
Yeah.
Now you mention it, it was very X-Files-esque, and I think I might have subconsciously thought, well, actually, screw this. I don't want this. I want The X-Files.
And, I mean, it's possible that if that's the itch it was trying, if that's the itch you were trying to scratch with it as well, you'd get a certain way into it, and then it just... Because what it does is... It starts out looking like it's going to be like that, and it also drip feeds the conspiracy stuff, the overarching stuff, the way X-Files does. And then at some point, I don't know if they got network notes or they got impatient or it looked like it wasn't doing that well. They just decided we're not going to drip feed the conspiracy anymore. That's what it's going to be about. So they kind of dropped the weird science of the week thing, because the theory about it is it's like The X-Files, but instead of sometimes supernaturally things, it's all going to be weird experimental science stuff ripped from New Scientist or whatever. And they seem to get bored of it really quickly. And then suddenly it's all about in The X-Files, it was like you found out over a whole bunch of seasons that Fox Mulder's, relationship to this stuff went back to his childhood.
Yes.
And stuff like that. Yeah. But you really didn't know that. And the cigarette smoking man kept turning up. You didn't know anything about him for seasons at a time.
Yeah.
They kind of get bored by about episode 6 or 7 of Fringe, and then that becomes what it's about.
Oh,
and then the second series completely throws all of that out the window. And it's just about this war between these two, like, alternate realities. And it's just so weird. It's so weird.
It sounds like the second season I'd probably like more.
That's when it's really different from The X-Files. Yeah, definitely. And it's got Pacey from Dawson's Creek. So,
But that was one of the things I struggled with.
You didn't like?
Yeah. The only role I've ever really liked him in is in where he plays a gay man in Cruel Intentions. And that's it.
He's in... I think he might be in. Is he in Jennifer's Body as a bad guy?
Oh, I haven't seen that. He's in Urban Legends. Is really not very good in that. It's not a very good film.
Though. Nobody's very good in Urban Legends.
And obviously Dawson's Creek.
I watched a film. I think it's called My Name Is Modesty. It's a Modesty Blaze, who's a Modesty Blaze is a pulp hero and comic character from way back. And this film was like a Quentin Tarantino presented or produced. I can't remember if it was presented or produced by him. But there was a period about 7 or 8 years ago when he was basically just sticking his name to fucking anything.
Yeah, his name was on stuff. Well, if it does what it's going to do.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have watched this if it wasn't on Netflix. And I'd flicked past it a few times, and the lady playing Modesty was quite pretty. So I thought, oh, I'll watch this. And I noticed that the guy who plays Jaime Lannister from Game of Thrones is on the poster because he's in it as well. So he's in it. And so I thought, oh, I'll watch this. And I stayed awake for most of it, but it really wasn't. It's my one really bad Netflix experience.
Oh, where you've had an expectation and you've been severely...
Yeah, and I mean, in this case, my expectation was really low as well, but it was still really bad. Because we watched, I'm at the moment, I'm watching Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt for the second time, because Amy's watching it, yeah. So I went through those episodes really quickly, and now Amy's going through them, so I'm watching that with her. We're watching Daredevil at about one or two episodes a night.
I love Daredevil. I really am hugely enjoying that, and we're about halfway through, and it is one of those things that we've savoured. And I have to say that Life Partner Steve is to credit for that, because I would have watched it three times over by now, whereas he's like, no, let's pace ourselves and watch it, and it is so good. But Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, I really, really enjoy it, and it's really good, and I actually took me a little while to twig it was a Tina Fey thing.
Yeah.
Because I really binge watched it, as in I watched the whole series in a day or something crazy like that. I was not very well, so it was a good thing to put on. But I don't think it really lends itself to binge watching, because I found myself really tuning out for a while.
If you're not careful, and it's, I mean, I can see that, and the episodes start to bleed into.
Yeah. That's definitely, I want to rewatch it, because there's some stuff I'm like, actually, those episodes must have been a lot funnier than I thought they were, but.
Thing is, I didn't watch 30 Rock because I didn't love it. I like Tina Fey quotes when people share them on the internet. I know that she's very clever and quite funny, but I didn't like 30 Rock.
I didn't mind 30 Rock. My brother was quite a big fan of it, so I did watch most of it with him because he was watching it. It was okay. It was funny, made me laugh. I very much like Mean Girls.
She's in that, isn't she?
She wrote.
Did she write it?
Directed that as well. And also Baby Mama, she wrote and directed that as well.
I haven't seen that.
That's a very silly film. I dig Tina Fey and that kind of stuff. But, yeah, a lot of stuff that comes out, and especially that's Netflix original, so Netflix have actually, you know, they own it, I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Or they've had a hand in it. Are tailored for binge watching, because that's how, as a society, especially if you have Netflix, that's what we do. We binge watch. But that didn't really lend itself to it. That's not a flaw in it at all. It's not a bad thing. I think it made me realise, actually, maybe I shouldn't be binge watching things. But I would definitely want to watch it again.
Sitcoms really benefit, especially if they're really joke heavy ones. They do kind of benefit from just being watched in a more casual way on TV or something as well, don't they? Because there's such a formula to them. And by necessity, sitcoms always have a formula, really, because that's what they exist for. And yeah, if you watch four of them in a row, and that's like people can do that with episodes of Friends when they're already really familiar with the because you're watching it as a sort of a comfort thing. But when you're watching it for the first time, it must be a bit weird.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, I don't know. I kind of love her though.
Yeah. I am a huge fan of The American Office, which she was in.
She must be in it later than we've.
Yes, she will be later. That's not spoiling it. Her character's been in that. And obviously, there is a bit of her character in this as well, but she's just a very funny actress. I can't remember her name, which is really awful.
Ellie Kemper. That's took it. Me a few seconds. I know her from Bridesmaids.
Oh, yeah, of course. She's in Bridesmaids. Yeah, she's brilliant in Bridesmaids too. Not as in Bridesmaids too, but
I was going to say that's not happening.
T-double-O. But yeah, just occurred to me another reason why sitcoms may not lend themselves to be binge watched in the sense where you're watching it is because there's nothing to entice you to the next episode.
Yeah,
there's no cliffhanger. It's not like Breaking Bad or Battlestar Galactica where you're like, oh my god, I want to know what's going to happen next. It's like, oh, that was a really funny episode. I'll put it on because I liked laughing at it, and then actually. By the fifth episode, you're like, what? What's going on? Who's this person?
Yeah.
Why is that funny? And you just sort of lose it quite quickly.
That's the nature of them, I think. And yeah, I think I agree. The funny thing about Daredevil, you said you said that Steve's kind of made the
conscious decision.
Conscious decision to do that, to ration them. And it's a really good idea. But I kind of, in our house, that's happened by accident. In a weird way, it's kind of the same. I think I'd binge watch them anyway. And it's because Amy can't manage that we're not doing it. But that's because I have this, I've got almost, you know, what's that race that really burly men do? They get really, you know, it's really...
As in a physical race.
Yeah, it's really popular with hipsters. The where you like... You run through a bunch of mud and then you have to swim for a bit and then you have to kill a puppy. The bad motherfucker or something like that.
Boot camp thing.
That sort of thing.
I hate myself and my body thing.
Yeah.
My mummy didn't love me love thing. I don't know. That's awful. I don't mean that, listener. If you've done it, you're a much better human being than I am. So, yeah. Not a salt course, is it?
No, I think it's called course? Bad Mudder or, Bad or Mudder. Dirty Mudder or...
Oh, you're talking about the actual charity thing. Oh, Big Mud thing.
Dumb...
Mudder, Big Mudder thing, I
Mudder
think it's called.
Fucker.
That's what it should be called.
Yeah, I think... anyway, so the metaphor would have worked better if I'd remembered what it was called. But basically, I'm kind of like that when it comes to staying up really late and watching stuff. Which is why, you know,
it hurts, but you keep going.
Yeah, like, why I stuck on this Modesty Blaze film at 1 a.m. and was still watching it at 3 a.m., you know, 2:30 in the morning. That's not a healthy thing, but it is quite an impressive thing that I can do.
That's true, actually. Yeah.
And so I think I'd end up watching through, Daredevil, but unusually for that sort of show, it's pretty dense. Like, it flows really nicely,
you're right, it is.
It's a fairly, to say it's weighty is silly because it is about a guy dressing up in black and beating criminals up. But
well, I wonder, I mean, another benefit of Amazon original and the Netflix original stuff. It's not called, is it called
Amazon Prime?
No, but their own made stuff. It's Amazon original. Anyways, the series where it's been made with that sort of mode of delivery in mind is that there is no pilot. Mm-hmm. So essentially they're able to do what they want. They commission the whole series and they can be more dense and they can be more considered with it. Whereas before they try and rush out things that then keep people watching to keep it renewed or to get the next episodes or to get the whole thing commissioned. So Daredevil's had that luxury, which is really nice. I'm really, really pleased that it has done that.
Yeah.
And you're right. They're quite long episodes, I suppose. They're not half an hour, but they don't feel that long. How long are they?
I think they must be 40 or 50 minutes. Because TV normally gets broken into hour slots or half-hour slots, doesn't it? But traditionally, most American TV has ads. So when we get it on DVD, it's a 40-minute episode for an hour slot. But I guess these don't have
52,
that.
52, 53 minutes, like that. Yeah.
So
it's, you know, it's enough time to have a really good episode and, like I said, make it really dense, have a lot in there.
It's so violent.
It is. It does it very well, though.
I love how violent it is.
It's not, certainly not for children, but it's something I don't really consider to be, it is violent, but I don't think of it as violent, which sounds really odd.
Well,
maybe my sensitivity of violence gone, I don't know.
I saw people online talking, just to bring it back to comics, we are a comic book podcast.
Oh yeah, well we talked about Daredevil.
And I mean, Daredevil is a comic thing, but like, we don't always talk about the films and stuff, but I'm still really enjoying Daredevil, so I think we should make this arbitrary decision to talk about it.
Yeah, it's an honorary mention.
But I did see people talking about how, like being snarky about how quickly Daredevil resorts to torture and how awful a thing that is. And taken in the context of TV, yeah, it is. When you, in post Guantanamo Bay, post 24 era, in this post 24, post Guantanamo Bay era, whenever someone uses torture or there are scenes of torture, it has that extra sort of, if a hero does it, it's really weird. But then, and so I saw people being snarky about that, and I got it, and I thought, well, yeah, that is a bit weird. But then I was watching it as well, and I thought, but this is how superheroes have always been depicted doing this. It looks worse when you see them actually doing it physically. But every time Batman or Spider-Man, even Spider-Man, who's in like bright primary colors, or Daredevil needs to find out something about crimes, you see them going into bars full of petty criminals and beating them up until they tell them something. That's just how they've always found stuff out, you know? They don't go in and cajole people or trick them, or we just don't normally see it.
No.
I guess.
And I think too, the juxtaposition to that is also how Kingpin's...
Kingpin.
Yeah, but I'm worried now that people haven't seen it and don't know the comics. And
Kingpin is in it. I don't know what Jane's going to say next.
I was just going to say how he's up to the point I'm at now, he's a very sympathetic character almost. You do sympathise with him. Obviously, he's really horrible and does horrific things, but he and Daredevil don't seem very different.
Different, no.
And that's really interesting. And that kind of character development's really good, really strong, especially as we're only up to episode 5 or 6 now, I think. And for that to get to that point is actually really quite credit to the writing and how they're treating the characters too. But since reading Daredevil comics, I've not come into contact with Kingpin that much, and I certainly haven't got a feeling that I'm like, oh, I feel so sorry for you.
Yeah,
you're like, oh my God, you're an a-hole. Kick his ass, Daredevil.
Yeah, I think he's introduced into the comics in the first place in quite a... he's already a pretty well-defined asshole. I think that might be how you talk about something... That might be how you talk about something in depth while not actually spoiling it. I think we did okay there.
Oh, good.
Talking about themes without actually talking about specifics.
Yeah, we didn't specify anything, so that's good. Go on.
It is very much... It's interesting because the version of Daredevil that's in the comics at the moment, it's quite light. It's relatively lighthearted.
Yeah.
Admittedly, after several years of it being pretty relentlessly bleak and realistic and difficult. Not difficult, but like harsh.
Yeah.
So, that's pretty much the version they've gone with. The harsh version is the version they've gone with in TV.
Well, it's working so far for me.
I like it. And Game of Thrones is back, so we're enjoying that as well.
I still haven't watched any Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it's, I mean...
My brother gets really upset by that. I feel like I should watch it just for him.
It's fine. It's the thing I realized a really long time ago about the world.
I love how accepting you are of my decision. That's fine,
it's
Jane.
It's just okay.
That's okay. God still loves you.
It's not. Yeah, I mean, God loves all of us. That's the point of him / her here. Her. Oh, because God is genderless.
Is that it?
Yeah. They.
They. Yeah, they. I like they.
I'm really not very good with pronouns.
You've done well. I think they. We should settle on they.
Okay, good. Shall we... Well, no, we haven't seen each other in ages. We've just been talking about TV. We caught up a little bit before the podcast. It's a bit weird, listener, addressing you there for the first time in, what, probably about 20 minutes.
Hello, listener.
This is a podcast. You're listening to a podcast. That's what you're listening to. Jane and I haven't seen each other in probably over a month because there were babies and house moves and all sorts of things going on. And the first time we're in a studio with each other again, we're stuck in this weird studio that we never normally use with this. We're in different rooms.
One of us is being experimented on, clearly. It's not clear who, though.
I can see her through this.
It's really odd. You've got lots of lines going across your face.
I understand why there's glass and it's like double glazed. I don't understand why it's that shatterproof glass.
Well, and it looks like someone's already shattered the glass in the middle of the two panes of glass.
Oh, no,
maybe there was a pane in the middle and it's been smashed and that's what the duct tape's all about. It's very odd, listener.
It is very strange.
I don't think we're giving the best audio visual for you. We'd be rubbish at commentating on Daredevil.
Or anything, really.
Or anything, but specifically.
I especially don't really understand sports, so any sports we'd be really struggling with.
It would be such and such has got the ball. Now another person's got the ball. The ball's gone over a line. That would be it, really, wouldn't it?
I did see a lady doing the, you know, that ninja, that show where they all do the ninja assault course. It's like Wipeout without the water. Yeah, it's like Total Wipeout without the water. I think it's based on Total Wipeout.
It's based on Ninja Warriors, which is a Japanese
show.
Yeah.
But without Gunge. It's the sort of show where you'd expect there to be Gunge, but there really isn't any Gunge.
Is it on ITV or?
I'm not sure. This was a clip that people had been sharing online in a very.
Okay, I don't know this.
In a very, screw you, anyone who says that women can't physically do things that men can do thing, where this woman does. I'll share the clip in the show notes, which you can. You can look at, listener, at wehaveissues.net. But it's this female athlete who's a contestant on this thing. Every time I've watched the show, it's normally been people get like about 30 seconds into the assault course and then fall off and then they're out. And that's kind of the show, is watching people fail at this. She gets through the whole damn thing. It's amazing. And it's just like... this is an interesting thing, listener. They've gone to lots of trouble to soundproof the booths between me and Jane, so we can't hear each other without earphones. But the doors are not soundproof, so you might be able to hear people out in the corridor.
Just for a bit of colour to show that we're in an environment with other people.
So sorry if you heard that, if you're hearing doors and stuff going in the background. But yeah, I don't think I even realised there was as much of this assault course as I saw this woman go through. So I think I could probably commentate on that. But it would basically just be, bloody hell.
Yeah.
Did you see that? Blimey. She's quite cute though, isn't she? Oh my God, did you see that? That's pretty much on a loop.
I look forward to putting that into the show notes so I can actually watch the video. I'm behind on everything, Nick. The internet's a very odd place for me at the moment. I feel like I know how old people feel now when they're like, kids today, and I'm like, well, I don't even know what old people are doing today. They're having kids today. Yes, I've been very vacant.
Why have you been cloistered? Is there anything you can talk about?
It is literally life.
Just stuff.
Everything's just quite busy at the moment. I have joined Instagram, though. That was an odd moment. So I've actually been putting pictures on there. I am that_girl_Jane, if anybody would like to follow me. And I've mainly been... sharing pictures of the New Forest.
That's quite nice.
Yes, it was.
New Forest, lovely.
It's very lovely. And what else have I been doing? Oh, I have a PlayStation 4. So I have been playing Thief and crying about the cancellation of Silent Hills, which was actually formally announced this week. That's devastating.
They're not going to do any more of those. You and Steve love those.
Yes,
I've noticed Steve's had a long-standing love affair of those.
I know, and he has introduced me to that love affair, and I am very pleased, and now I'm very gutted, because that was... we enjoy our games, so we were always going to get a next-gen console. I always favour PlayStation over the Xbox. But one of the main selling points was that Silent Hills was PlayStation exclusive, and that was a game that we would ultimately really, would want in our lives, and now has been cancelled.
They've hooked you in and then they've pulled it out from under you.
Well, to be fair, there are the game. I mean, sad to say, I've actually been playing a lot of old PS1 games on there through the arcade. So I've been playing Abe's Odyssey, that's been really good. And I recently completed Thief, which was a game that was actually intended for the PS3 and the Xbox 360, but I think delayed production meant it actually got released on next-gen consoles as well, and I picked that relatively cheap. Really good game. If you like stealth games, it's a really good game.
I've heard very good things about Thief.
Yes, really liked it. Some of the glitches are really funny in it, which is good. They're not annoying. They don't make you despair ever playing games. So... But yeah, there's been lots of different things. I'm trying to think of things geeky I've done.
Xbox Live have been doing this thing. I'm just giving you some space to think. Xbox Live have been doing this thing where they give you games if you're signed up to the main, the proper account. They give you a couple
games
of games a month. Yeah.
The PlayStation Network does that as well. They do something similar. I would actually say at this point, only being a PS Plus customer for a few months now. I prefer the Xbox Gold giveaways.
Well, it's at the moment they're giving away two in every session.
Wow.
So it's like two games at the beginning of the month and two games in the second half of the month. And they're not like...
So you're getting four?
Yeah. So at the moment they've given away Terraria, which is great, although I already play it on the PC anyway. And lots of proper games, like bulky games that I'm not... Like they gave away the rebooted Tomb Raider, which I was already halfway through. They just gave away the poorly received, but I still want to play it, Assassin's Creed Black Flag.
Oh, yeah.
Not good?
I haven't played it, but my brother's a big Assassin's Creed fan, and that was the one game he was not very happy
about. I've not heard good things about them, but they're all like weighty.
It's free, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
What can disappoint you free? Nothing, really.
But they've all been really big, bulky games. So I keep downloading them to my Xbox. I'm never going to get a chance to play any of the damn things.
And then you run out of space in your Xbox. You're like, oh my God, what are we going to sacrifice?
Yeah, and I mean, so I end up playing this game called, I think it's called Darkest Dungeon, which is still in beta, I think, on my PC, because it's relatively easy to get into quickly. But I mean, like, so I keep downloading these games to the Xbox. I don't play any of them. Not playing any of them. I want to mention Steve's love of Silent Hill. He's literally the only person, I think one of the only people, who has ever willingly had a conversation with me about the relative merits and failings of the first Silent Hill film.
Oh, okay.
Which I quite enjoyed, even though it's got Sean Bean in and he doesn't die. Oh, shit, that's a spoiler.
Oh, yeah.
That's a bit weird.
The film's really good, and I think the whole Sean Bean thing, yeah, is just... wasn't it? Yeah,
it's weird. He turns up in it at the beginning.
Do you know the story about why he's in it? You must know.
Is it? No, I don't.
Well, this is not. Listener, you'd have to do a bit more research. But from what I understand from speaking to people and doing a little bit of research on the internet, is that the lack of male presence in that first film was an issue for the studio that were going to distribute it. So that's why Sean Bean character is so odd, because he's not supposed to be in it, and he's sort of shoehorned into places to appease somebody. I don't know who, but
that's quite hilarious, because he doesn't really do anything.
No,
in
nothing.
It,
so it's just his presence. That's the film does not benefit from him being in it, and I think it probably takes something away, especially the spoiler of the ending. That doesn't. But then again, you're like, what? And you kind of just don't care. Really, about that. You're like, oh, whatever. It's all about Alyssa and her mum. So, yeah, that's the story behind it. Apparently, the company that were distributing it were like, we need a man in this. There's too many women.
Isn't the big guy with the giant scary sword thing and the hood, isn't he a guy?
He is. And with Silent Hill, each character is a representation of more than just a person or a gender. It represents an emotion. So
in my case, he represents
terror,
pant shitting fear.
Yeah, he's terrifying. Yeah, Pyramid Head is one of the most terrifying baddies. But and it's where the games are really clever, and how they play on vulnerability and emotion and gender and other things. And the film could have done a lot better with that, but it does pretty well. And the whole Sean Bean thing is just completely puzzling.
Weird.
Well, it just shows again, like, just leave it to the people making the films. Don't assume what we want. Just let us decide.
I find it even better and funnier him being in it now that I know.
Yeah,
it was just a glitch.
Awful, really awful. But yes, and it is very sad they're not going to make the next film. I didn't play the playable trailer. I was far too much of a wimp, but life partner Steve did, and he didn't jump. I was jumping every second.
Are you a horror house? I don't think you're a you're a horror house,
yeah,
aren't you?
But that's just, it's too submersive when you're playing, though. I remember playing Alone in the Dark when that came out. I can't remember what I was when I was still living at home. I was quite young, and I went up the hill. Dog jumped out of the cave, and obviously it's all dark, and I screamed the house down, and my mum came tearing up the stairs thinking something horrific had happened. There's me going, the game scared me, and she's just looking at me like, you were definitely swapped at the hospital. So but no, she wasn't, she loves me. And so I love horror. I really do love horror. I like that whole creepy, creeping yourself out, scary type thing, and knowing that I'm quite mentally stable and that will never happen to me. But games are just way too... I mean, I found Alan Wake quite scary.
It is quite scary.
I know, but I don't think I was supposed to find it as scary as I did. I want to be in the light all the time.
It's a little bit more arcadey and Rockstar Gamesy, and it's third person as well. So you are removed from it a little bit compared to those games where your characters are forced to move quite slowly and you've got camera angles controlling every...
Yeah.
Because that's the thing with Resident Evil and Silent Hill, isn't it? They do a really good job of managing the camera angles. I think the last game that kind of freaked me out, and I don't think I played either of them all the way through, but it's those Japanese games. I think there might be Konami games where you take photos of ghosts.
Yeah.
Fatal Frame, I think.
I couldn't play those. I know about them. Same with Slender Man. Oh, my God. That would terrify me. Watching the... Let's play videos on those terrifies me.
I'm not up for that.
Oh.
Have you played Alien Isolation yet?
I haven't, no. I've heard mixed... That's a Marmite. That's the Marmite of PS4 games at the moment. I don't know if it's on the Xbox One.
I'm not sure. It might be that by the time you play it, it will have been mined for... You'll have heard every single reaction to it. So you'll... Because nearly everything I've heard about it is how freaky, how many jump... scares there are in
oh,
it.
Oh, right, okay,
like
Dead Space. Dead Space, quite jumpy game. I don't think I'd...
But if you're told that for months before you play a game and then you play it, there's a very good chance you'll be like, well, you're tense the whole time.
Oh, no,
and
I'll
then
still actually, jump. The stupidest things will make me jump, like, you know, you'll move a piece of paper and I'll freak out. It would just heighten my anxiety for something too horrific to jump out at me. I would like to play it. It's just that... When you buy a new console, you want to buy lots of new games, which is what I've done. So I have a hell of a lot to get through. Thief is the only game I've completed so far, and there's still plenty more to go through. So I will. I mean, I wasn't in a rush to play it, and it is interesting. It's a Marmite game. People really, really love it, or they really hate it. So I'll be really looking forward to seeing how that is. But no, I hadn't heard about the jump scares. So
yeah.
Well, it's probably good that I know than not know. For the controller's sake more than anything else. But
yeah, I've heard that like the alien itself is obviously geared up for that sort of thing, but I'm probably spoiling the game.
No, I assume there'd be an alien.
Should we talk about comics?
Yes, let's.
Because we've done that thing where it's been such a long time since we've seen each other that we're catching up lots, and we haven't talked about comics
yet. We haven't, but hopefully we've entertained you enough, listener, so far.
Yeah, listener. Except those of you who don't really care about video games, and I know there's a couple of you. Probably
but
if
they were film-related video games.
No, they were all film-related, weren't they? So I've got a couple of comics, and you've got a comic as well, and we'll talk about those all. I'm not going to talk about 2002 this week. It bored me, frankly. Bitch Planet number 4 is $3.50 from Image. It's written by Kelly Sue DeConnick with art by... Valentin Delandro. Saying blur before you say a creator's name sounds like you're being really dismissive, doesn't it? I didn't mean to be.
Oh, no, it sounded like you were trying to pronounce a name.
It
was a bit more... it felt a bit more French, to be honest, your blur. So it
That's
sounded,
how I talk French.
It sounded quite... quite cultured.
I talk French roughly like I'm drowning. So it's written by Kelly Sue DeConnick with art by Valentin Delandro and colors by Chris Peter. It's I've talked about the last couple of issues, and I talked with Jesse about it as well on one of the episodes, and there are plenty of people already talking about Bitch Planet on the internet because it's great and it's been very well received. Rightly so. So I won't say too much about it, except to say that it continues to be. It's this really great sort of future sports, space prison, dystopic future story. And it's quite violent, which is good. And it's pretty much an all-female cast. The men are only really in there as antagonists, which is interesting to see. But the thing I really want to say about this issue is I think this is the first issue. This is the issue where it's really come together for me, because I've loved every issue I've read of it so far. But what normally happens is with anything sufficiently new and exciting and comic form, you normally find that if interest's going to start waning, it's normally by issue three or four.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
So you've got like the first issue is where it wows you and it's not like anything you've seen before. This isn't just Bitch Planet. This is loads of things. Mm. You're unsettled because you don't quite know what form it's going to take yet. But
I suppose that's usually around about the mid-arc, isn't it? Because arcs are usually typically six issues, yeah, if they're going to be a long-running thing. So you know by the middle of that first arc, you know, do I really care what's going to happen at the end?
Well, because you also get this thing where the first issue sets the scene and it's showing you all this stuff and you still don't really know very much by the end of the first issue if they've done their job, especially with a lot of the Image books. You don't know much by the end of the first issue, so you're still kind of excited to see the second one. And the second one's more about expanding the universe of the story and setting the scene. And so, yeah, that's normally the third or the fourth issue is where you get to see what the book's really going to be like, where you realize, yeah, oh, hang on, that's like the second, you know.
Yeah.
So the second issue, third, that's when they've started to establish what's going on. And if it's going to shake you off, that's when it's going to happen. But it turns out this book's even more fun than the first couple of issues really suggested it was going to be. So I really like it very much. Language and nudity and violence advisory, but it's a lot of fun. It's quite interesting as well because this is quite a personal book to the writer. You get an insight in the where I think she does the letters pages, or certainly she introduces them. You do get a bit of an insight into the behind-the-scenes stuff of the book. And in this case, there's a shower scene that involves, like, a sex scene.
Yeah.
And this issue is apparently a little bit late. I don't tend to notice that stuff, but this issue is apparently a little bit late. And she cites that one of the reasons for that was that they actually had to go back and do that scene, take a few passes at it, because they wanted it to be in there. And there is some it does serve a narrative purpose. Mm-hmm. Stuff does happen, parts of the plot do happen during that scene, but they kept going back to it because it uses the language of exploitation films.
Okay.
Like 1970s, 80s grindhouse and exploitation films, and the whole look of it kind of reflects that. So it's graphic, but they didn't want it to be too male-gazy.
So they didn't want it to detract from the story.
Yeah, they didn't want it to be titillating.
It can be sexy because that is sexy, but it serves a purpose in the story.
Yeah.
Okay, well, wow, that's a fine balance. It's too easy for it to be a titillating thing for people to look at and not take anything away from it other than, oh, sex.
Especially but, dudes.
Yeah, exactly. It would be an easy sell, wouldn't it? So, wow, okay. That's really impressive, actually. I'm really impressed with that.
I did not sex myself to it. And there's loads of nudity, so that's telling you something. If it's me, you know, I can pretty much sex myself at the drop of a hat.
Well, that's good to know.
That's the first time you've ever looked away when I said something.
Oh, actually, I feel a bit bad. I wasn't looking away. What I was actually doing is I got my thumbnail caught in my phone and I got a bit worried that I might yelp. So I had to look down to make sure I could retrieve it. But let's just say I looked away because I got coy because you were talking about sexing hats.
It's very weird, isn't it? Because there's this big glass thing. And it is a bit like one of us is in prison as well and the other one's visiting, but also recording a podcast while visiting
prison. More things in your room, so I think I might be in prison.
Yeah,
you seem
I think
to have more
so.
Luxuries.
Yeah.
Unless you're just like top dog or something and then maybe I'm visiting.
I get whatever the hell I want in my visitation booth. Yeah. Oh, I watched all of Oz. All of the first season of Oz
while we didn't
have the internet. Yeah, it's pretty good. It does have, and it's apt to me talking about this while we're talking about Bitch Planet, I suppose. It's interesting because you can tell that when it first aired, it was the most hardcore thing on TV, but since then, and it's a HBO show, it's one of their early ones that's quite hardcore, but actually in some ways it seems pretty, there's a lot of cutting away from things that now we just get to see. They just show us stuff all the time.
I prefer the cutting away. I'd rather have that has more of an impact for me, that like, oh my god, what are they doing? So I let my imagination run wild rather than going, oh, insertion again or whatever.
Sometimes, yes, I agree. I don't always like graphic stuff for the sake of graphic stuff. But then in a recent episode of Banshee that we watched, Amy and I got to see two people fighting each other, and they are literally, thanks to the amazement of special effects and the willingness to just go wherever the hell they want with stuff now that they have on cable TV or whatever it is, these two people are literally chopping bits out of each other with their hands. God. It's horrible.
It is horrible.
We're living in the golden age of television, Jane.
Apparently.
But yeah, Oz is pretty good. But it is interesting to see that this most graphic of all prison dramas has probably been... It's kind of more like, in terms of tone, it's more like The Shield, which was a Fox show.
Oh, wow.
Which was quite adult for...
It was. I wouldn't say it was graphically adult. There wasn't a lot of, there was violence, but it wasn't excessive, and it was always in keeping with what the story was talking about.
Characters can say shit, but they can't say fuck that much.
Yes.
And stuff like that.
Well, yeah, I don't remember there being excessive swearing in it.
They could probably say bloody damn if Americans said that, but that's just us who say that. Bloody damn hell fuck nuts. No, they wouldn't say fuck.
No, they wouldn't say that.
The other thing about Bitch Planet is the whole... It's like this mix of a prison drama and a women in prison drama and a future sports thing. And we finally hear about the sports game. And through a bit of a recap that's going on this sports TV show, they explain kind of the rules of this game, and it does sound quite interesting. They've this interesting thing that they have where the teams can have as many people as they want in them, but there's a weight limit. So the whole team, it's basically like a rugby derivative. Oh. But the team can have as many people as they want in it, but they can't go over a certain overall weight, which I thought was ingenious. I loved it. I don't know if there are any sports that do that, but I find that fascinating.
Yeah, that is fascinating. We'll have to find that out.
So if you want a really big, strong, like huge, hulking person, that's fine, but you're going to lose out on a couple of tiny little scrappy people.
Oh, it depends what the goals are of the game.
If you had one giant, hulky person and then a whole bunch of little, 4'5" women, because it's women, 4'5" women who are just really violent, in my experience of really short women, that is quite often the case. So, yes, really scrappy. You could do that. Or you could have a whole bunch of average-sized people, and that's not really very interesting, is it?
I suppose it's what's the aim of the sport is it will determine who you have to make your weight limit.
I think it's a little bit like Quidditch, only without broomsticks.
So you have to catch a ball?
Or
thing flying around.
Or like their actual rules.
No,
I don't really. I've seen all of those films, and I still don't think I really understand Quidditch.
I think you have to. I don't know. I'm not even going to. Actually, I just don't know.
This is literally the only podcast, ever where neither of the people ever actually read Harry Potter.
Well, wait, I've read it.
Oh, you just didn't. The rules of the game just kind of.
No.
I don't like sport.
Well, to be fair, it was quite a long time ago that I read them. And from visually trying to think about the films, because sport's always better when you see somebody playing than when you read it. Because you're like, what? This, boom, don't care. I think all I can really remember is Harry Potter going for the little flying ball thing. But I think that's like a bonus, isn't it? That's the bonus thing.
The Sneetch or something,
yeah. So there actually is a game where they have to compete with each other, but actually catching that. Doesn't mean catching that means you win the whole game.
I think it's a weird little bonus thing that means winning the whole game.
Oh.
Which is a little bit weird. You'd think that would be part of the main game. Well, that would be the whole game.
When you say it's like Quidditch, I think we've established you both don't really understand Quidditch. What do you mean?
I think it's more just like rugby.
Oh,
but the truth is I don't really understand rugby. So,
so there's people and there's an aim to the sport and there may be a ball involved.
I think there's a ball involved.
And they can either touch it with their hands or not.
Yeah, I think
so. Okay, well, that's I think that's general enough for sports.
I'm pretty sure there's going to be busting heads as well, just because that's the sort of book it is.
Oh, okay.
Another book I got this week. My sentence structure is awful. I should have nailed that after all the years of podcasting we've been doing.
Maybe your brain's just trying to practice more.
But I'm like 41 if I haven't nailed it yet.
Maybe it's just trying to catch you out.
Nearly 42. Black Cross, second issue of Black Cross. I actually think this might have come out a couple of weeks ago. It's $3.99. It's from Dynamite, from the pages of Project Superpowers. Don't know what that is, really. It's written by Warren Ellis with art by Colton Worley and colours by Morgan Hickman. I did talk about the first issue of this. It's the second issue is actually even nicer looking in terms of art. Colton Worley's art, and I've never seen their work before, but before this series, and it reminds me a little bit of Alex Maleev, and well, really only of Alex Maleev. That's the only other person whose art looks remotely like this. Very realistic style. It's this weird supernatural story set in this small town. Lots about it reminded me a little bit of the second issue of the Sabrina book coming out from Archie at the moment, which is a little bit weird because that's also about a small town, well-realized small town into which this scary lady is coming, and it's got that in common with this. But otherwise, this is very different. I'm still not entirely sure what's going on. There was a horrible death in the first issue. A man set fire to himself and then walked into the water, but his body's disappeared. They just know people saw him doing it, but they haven't found his body by this point. And I think someone else has disappeared, and there's all sorts of weird stuff happening. And into this, you've got a guy who's in witness protection. Who we find out in the first issue is in witness protection. There are federal agents who are visiting the town. I could go into more detail, but I'm kind of just unpicking it myself at the moment. It's okay. That sort of a mystery story with lots of moving parts. And B, I think it'd kind of spoil it to go into too much detail about the plot, because it's all about this mysterious town and all of these mysterious characters and how that's unfolding. It feels a little bit Twin Peaksy. In a good way, I think. It's not as weird, but I'm just in that a small town with weird murderous stuff going on in it.
So it's naming the themes pretty well then. Yeah. That's good.
And it's it's one of my favourite pieces of Warren Ellis writing in the last few years, just because it's very structured. Although Trees was excellent. It's very structured, and because it's a thriller, there's no real space to be self-indulgent. I like it when he's self-indulgent. He's got a very distinct voice in most of his stuff, but in this, he's just delivering this thriller story, and it's really the supernatural thriller story, and it's really interesting. The art is gorgeous in this book as well, though. I really like it a lot. Very striking cover. I'm not sure which cover it is I've got, but it's very good. Wow. All of the covers are really good on this as well. Just really good, and it's kind of real world with supernatural elements to it, setting, if that's the sort of thing you like. And the third book I got is, you got this as well. Yeah. It's Pisces, issue one of Pisces from Image. It's $3.50. It's written by Curtis Weeb with art by Johnny Christmas.
That's a great name.
Which one? Johnny Christmas.
Yeah,
it's a good name, isn't it? I like it a lot.
Just to give some context of why I bought this particular book is... I'm going through one of my fickle stages of really intensely loving a genre. Genre the right word? I guess it is. So not necessarily science fiction, but just things in space.
Right.
So this really appealed to me because it's going to be in space. See, and that's good by me at the moment.
Isn't that weird? Because the cover...
I know.
Is spacey.
I know.
And it must have caught my eye. There wasn't much new this week. That's the thing I noticed.
That was also adding to this. But I was very happy that it was spacey.
Yeah, and so it caught my eye, and then I completely forgot that it had anything spacey in it. Very quick. I mean, to be fair.
Yes. I mean, it's a setup issue being the first issue. So you don't, other than the cover and maybe some other, you know, little snippets in the story, you don't know. The space isn't the theme. It's the character we're really focusing on.
It's a... just to say a little bit about the story, the main, I guess he's our main protagonist. He's certainly the only one we've really seen in this episode. He's a dude called Dylan. He's clearly a reprobate. We get this early framing sequence where we find out it's literally the first scene. He misses his child being born or something. That's the impression you get, isn't it? And you get a sense from this altercation he has with this dude that he clearly knows at the hospital, that this is basically him. He's an asshole.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the issue pretty much is this incredibly graphic... Is it Vietnam?
Yes.
That's the conflict, isn't it?
I mean, I read the... Because I bought this on Comixology, so I read the description, so I knew that it was... He was a Vietnam War hero, but I wasn't expecting there to be as much of the... war itself in it as there was, and took me by surprise. And you're right, it was from that first scene of being in a hospital to the second scene of war was a real, and you know, a real change. And also thinking, this is going to be in space. What's going to happen? The war part's pretty horrific.
Yeah, it's like a kind of a behind enemy lines.
So
he's in this very, I mean, war's obviously intense anyway, but he's also in this very isolated situation with just one other person. And it's... when it starts getting violent, because there are fisticuffs in the first few pages, but when it starts getting violent, it's kind of shocking how graphic it is, I think. I mean, it's worth mentioning, I suppose, that that's kind of because of the art, isn't it?
Yes.
I think.
Yeah, the art's gorgeous and the colouring as well.
The Johnny Christmas, that name is awesome.
Good.
Has this really clean, detailed, clean line style that the color accentuates a lot. It reminds me a bit of I think it's Michael Golden, might be Christopher Golden, and all of the artists like Tony Moore and people like that who followed on from along that particular track of comic art, which means it's, even though the settings are really grubby, the art's pretty clean.
Yeah.
And the colour makes things grubby rather than the art doing it. But it does mean that once people start using knives on each other and things like that, you literally see every thing.
Yeah.
There's no vagueness to the art at all.
No. It's sort of like, that's what's happening. That's happening.
I sound very bloodthirsty in this episode.
You do. You're enjoying it way too much.
you read a couple of, or you've read certainly a couple of Curtis Wee books, haven't you? Because
yes.
Doesn't he do Peter Panzerfaust?
Right. Peter Panzerfaust. And was it The Wake he did as well? And there was another story I can't remember off the top of my head.
Green Wake.
That's it, Green Wake. And... gosh, there was another one that he did. Yes, no, I'm a big fan of his writing, really big fan of his writing, and I was quite pleased when I saw his name. I was like, space, yes.
Spacey stuff.
Yeah, spacey stuff. Not Kevin. It's not, when I say space, I don't mean Kevin Spacey
Kevin
phase.
Spacey.
That phase is over for now. I'm talking about space as in not Earth.
You had a Kevin Spacey phase?
Yeah.
Spacey phase.
Yeah.
I don't think I knew about that. I knew that you tend to get obsessive with particular genres, but I did not know that you're
one of those genres characters.
Is Kevin Spacey.
No, I do it with characters. Sorry, I do it with actors. I get actor phases as well, where I have to watch everything, like Katherine Heigl. I felt so sorry for life partner Steve when I went for my Katherine Heigl obsession. Nobody needs to be part of that.
Does she do a lot of the roles that Jennifer Aniston doesn't do?
Kind of. She does terrible films, but I love her so much.
I've only really seen her in one film, and I really like it, and it's the one film that she makes a point of slagging off whenever she's interviewed, I think, pretty much.
Is that Knocked Up?
Yeah, I really liked Knocked Up. She didn't, apparently. So,
well, I try not to read about her as a person because I'll never want to watch a film again if I did that with anybody, really. But she did the same with Grey's Anatomy when she won an Emmy and then said, I didn't deserve this Emmy because the writing was rubbish. I'm like,
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, we can sort of be quite dismissive about this whole area of knowing too much about your heroes by saying, well, if you knew about any of them, then you know they're all horrible. But some of them do sound like they're a little bit more horrible.
I know. But, you know, I'd like to stay disillusioned for as long as possible.
So anyway, Pisces. See, I still don't know. I guess Pisces sounds like a call sign, doesn't it? So maybe that's what that's all about.
Well, I was thinking because it's a star sign. So
That's
like
it's a bit spacey.
Yeah.
Astronomy and astrology that all mixed up in one.
And constellation and constellation.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like this first issue. I really don't have a sense of where it's going to go, but
no,
I was really enjoying the page turning.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, and I just like I don't. I really just want to know. I don't know where it's going to go. I don't care that I'm. It's not all set up, you know, point by point. This is what's going to happen. I really like that. It really had three very different narratives in it, and I want to see what happens with all three. So I really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to the next issue to come out and continue my space obsession.
Yeah, maybe you'll get more space in the next issue.
Although I watched the new Star Trek film, I can't say that really continued my space obsession.
Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think I'm sure Benedict Cumberbatch is really perfectly good, but maybe people need to get a bit of a grip when it comes to him.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's I forgot he was in that.
Yeah.
No, it's just it was quite long. I had to watch it in three sittings, to be fair. So
really?
I started watching it and it was quite late, so I was like, oh, whoops. And then watched another bit and then had to go out and then watch another bit. And I was like, and it got to the point, you know, when you feel your natural end of the film, you think, oh, this is going to be the end. And then it didn't end. And then you're like, well, what am I hanging on for?
It definitely suffers from, I mean, to be honest, most Hollywood films at the moment do suffer from that 2 hour.
Yeah.
There's no need for a film to be two hours.
You just have two different films, get more money that way.
Exactly. An hour and a half is plenty.
But I watched Oblivion. Is that what it's called? With Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Yeah. That massively exceeded my expectations. I really thought that was going to be terrible, and it was much better than I thought.
I saw that at the cinema. I really liked Edge of Tomorrow, which was the year after, and was kind of which is also Tom Cruise in science fiction. I was pretty hard on Oblivion. You might have had a bad sense of, you might have had low expectations because you'd heard me going on about it. I think it's beautiful.
Yes,
but basically after watching it. And I went on about this for weeks. So sorry, listener, if you've already seen me tweeting about this. But I kind of felt like the film I wanted to watch was the film that Andrea Riseborough's character was in.
Okay.
You know, his wife that he wakes up every morning with.
Yeah.
She was, by the end of it, she was the only character I gave a shit about, and she's treated so badly.
No, that's
by
true.
The film.
No, I agree. I mean, like I said, exceeded my expectations. My expectations were really, really low. In fact, I don't think I did have an expectation. I think it was just above, I don't know, caring about algae or something. I don't know. But it did exceed, and I think it was because it is a very beautiful film. I don't think I expected
it looks amazing.
And there were, you know, I had some serious issues with the story and stuff, but I just thought, oh, that was so much better than I thought it was going to be, which is always good. And there was another film I watched called Cargo, which is a Swiss director, but it's a German film. That's really good. I really liked that. Very atmospheric kind of aliens type film.
I'm sure I have to look. I don't think I've even heard of that.
No, so. I just stumbled across it when I was like, Netflix, give me things with space in.
Netflix is really good for discovery, which is weird because it's not a great interface, but it's sort of this episode not brought to you by Netflix. Sorry, we've talked about it so much, listener. But this has been the month where I really got my money's worth out of it. I think Oblivion was also the point. It was also my the point where I finally turned a corner on Morgan Freeman, to the point if I see him in anything, my initial reaction is, oh, fucking hell, this guy again?
Oh, no, I always think, I'm Morgan Freeman. That's all I think when I see him in things now.
We, Shawshank Redemption, which we do have on DVD, happened to be on the other day, so Amy was watching it. You know how that is. You've got, you can watch the film anytime you want, but you only watch it when it's on TV.
Well, that effort of actually taking out a case, walking across to where it needs to go in, putting it in there, and then closing it, and then it loading up, and all, you know.
Up to a point, it really sounded like you were talking about, sex. Then.
Oh, no, I was describing inserting a DVD into a DVD player.
Yeah, no, I mean, there was a point when you started talking about closing it off and switching it on and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, no, that's not right. Okay, that's
an illusion. Good.
But yeah, so my first instinct of watching Shawshank Redemption, my first few seconds were like, oh, fucking hell, Morgan Freeman. And then I was like, oh, no, wait.
Oh, wait, this is good.
He was good at this point. I also want to mention, I'll have to look up Cargo. So it's a science fiction film, is it?
Yes, yeah.
I want to mention Video Game High School, which I saw the first...
Oh, yes. Is that good?
It shouldn't be. It's a high school drama.
Glee-ish, and that makes me a bit scared.
It's by a group of people who do YouTube, who I've been watching their YouTube videos for ages. The main guy is Freddie Wong, who does... They're nearly always action. They're action... action sequences nearly always.
Okay.
Quite often with an element of a lot of humor to them.
Okay.
But heavy with video game tropes, normally first person shooter tropes.
Oh, right.
And considering that's pretty much what every one of the videos that he used to do is kind of like, and sometimes like Mario Kart style things as well. But the production values are always really good. Like the action choreography and the special effects and stuff are always really good. And Video Game High School was, I think, a YouTube series that they did originally.
Oh, yeah,
and
it was, I didn't know anything about it.
Him and a bunch of his, like people he worked with a lot, I think, were decided they were going to do it. And I watched the first episode and I thought, well, this is all right, but this isn't as charming as the little 3-minute videos. This is the point where they try and do something bigger and kind of lose my interest. And so I didn't bother watching anymore. And it's about this guy. It's set in this world where it's like our immediate future, but video games is actually a proper sport, like a respected one. It's already kind of a proper sport, but it's like a respected
one.
You'd
get a scholarship on playing video games.
Yeah, it's the one that everybody talks about and everybody's obsessed with. And this kid who's like he just lives with his mum and she's useless and he's very poor, accidentally beats this celebrity gamer while on TV. Like he's not the celebrity gamers on TV. He decides to jump into this kid's game and humiliate all of the people in this team, and he accidentally the poor kid accidentally beats the celebrity.
Okay.
And so he ends up getting this scholarship to this place called Video Game High School, which is such a dumb name, and it's the name of the TV show. It's the name of the show as well. It's a really cliched, a deliberately cliched setup. And then he goes to school, and he goes to the school, and they play video games. That's what they do. And people sort of do their first year, and then they have to major in a particular sort of video game. So then you get into all of this different stuff about, you know, every high school has every American high school, and every American high school show makes a big thing about the cliques. Mean Girl in particular did it, but like nearly all of them has this moment where the main character is showing you around all of the cliques. And sometimes it's really funny. In this, they do the same thing, but like one of the cliques is the first person shooter people. One of the cliques are the rhythm gamers.
Oh, that's quite funny.
And stuff like that. And it is pretty cool. And then later on, they introduce the casual gamers who all play all of these farming games, but they're hidden away in a basement somewhere and everyone thinks they're ridiculous because it's not even proper games. And then the other conceit, the visual conceit of the show is when they're playing the video games, they're actually doing, you know, it's actually, so they're playing the first person shooters, and you get these really, in the middle of these episodes, they'll be playing the games, and then you'll get these really cool proper action sequences where they're running around doing all of the soldier shit. with special effects to indicate that it's not all, that it's digital instead of bloody.
Yeah.
But that's the conceit of it. And so it makes it really visually interesting.
That is interesting.
And the episodes were about 20 minutes long. So I thought, well, okay, they've got the whole thing on Netflix, so I'll watch a couple. I didn't really think I was going to tune into it. But it's so charming. I just ended up watching like the whole thing in about 3 days. There's three seasons.
I think I know what I'm doing when I get home this evening.
It's, you'll work out really quickly if you don't want to watch it.
Okay,
but
it is
pretty dumb. And a lot of the humour is really like broad and dumb. But it's got so much heart to it. I just really like it. And it's pretty cool. Like, you think you're watching a normal web series and it all feels like a web series. And then, for example, one of them starts playing racing games. And so they've actually got these really cool Fast and the Furious style sports racy stuff. And they've got proper cars that they're driving down proper roads. But then they've got really cool digital stuff going on. It's good. It's worth watching. Oh, well. Video game high school, people.
We should probably round up our review of Pisces.
We should. Yeah.
It's good.
It is good.
We really enjoyed it, and you should check it out, and you'll enjoy it too.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
And it's a bargain.
I got really carried away.
That's
there.
Okay. No, it's fine. It was a natural conversation, Nick. Don't apologise for it. It's a bargain at £1.99.
Oh, on Comixology.
Yeah.
Or $3.50 if you're buying it in a shop like an old school old man person.
Hello, my name is Peter Hemerson, and this is Event Management Frontline, reporting from the pointy end of the latest comic book events. I'm very excited today, because DC's 2015 comic book event is here. Convergence is happening right now. But I'm not here to talk about Convergence. We've only had zero issues so far, so don't have a lot to go on. But what I can talk about is the lead-in to Convergence, which is Future's End. Now, Future's End is a weekly series which follows in the footsteps of the legendary 52 and the not-quite-so-legendary Countdown. And it tells the story of the new 52 DC Universe 5 years in the future and in the shadow of Convergence. Like the previous series, Future's End is a group effort. The writing is by a team which includes Brian Azzarello, Jeff Lemire, Dan Jurgens and Keith Giffen, which is a pretty good set of writers, in my opinion. There is also a massive pile of artists, as you might expect from a weekly comic. I can't name them all because I can't remember them all, but I have made a note of Patrick Zersha, Jesus Marino, Scott Eaton and Scott Hanna. I apologise to all those I've forgotten. You did a fine job, I'm sure. Future's End stretches across 48 weekly issues and the Zero issue, which was the free comic book day from 2014. It tells a number of initially disconnected stories that are gradually drawn together. The A story belongs to Batman Beyond. Now, technically, he's just Batman, but this Batman is a version of the young Terry McGinnis Batman from the Batman Beyond cartoon, so I'm going to call him Batman Beyond. His story starts 35 years into the future of the DCU. Earth is a post-apocalyptic wasteland, as you tend to get in these sorts of futures. It's ruled by the crazy supercomputer Brother Eye. At this point, most of the superheroes are sort of zombie cyborgs, and there are very few people left to fight him. Batman Beyond's mission is to travel back to the present day and stop Brother Eye from going crazy in the first place. Unfortunately, he doesn't go back far enough and winds up 5 years in the future, or 30 years in his past. It's complicated. So although Brother Eye isn't quite the world-ravaging monster it's going to become, it's already out there and operating, which makes his job that much more difficult. In addition to the Batman Beyond storyline, we also get about three other major arcs running through the series. There is a story which involves Stormwatch and Shade, Stormwatch being the former Authority, when Wildstorm was still a thing, and Shade is the supernatural agency which Frankenstein belongs to. In this arc, at the very beginning, Stormwatch is attacked by an extraterrestrial threat, and Shade investigate. And here we get to see stories about Frankenstein, Princess Amethyst, Atom, Hawkman, the Engineer, and Black Adam. The next arc involves Project Cadmus. In this version of the DCU, they're more of a corporation, and they are running an apparently illegal internment camp on a tropical island, which has loads of prisoners, basically superheroes from Earth 2. Now, it's a very long story why there are loads of prisoners from Earth 2 knocking around. I won't go into that now, but it is all explained in the series. Now, this section includes Grifter, Deathstroke, Lois Lane, Green Arrow and a new Outsiders team, and the heroes of Earth 2 themselves, most notably Big Barda, Mr. Miracle and Fury. The final major arc involves a terrible occult killer robot, which is some sort of advanced probe which is somehow involves magic and tries to hunt down Superman. Now, I'm not quite sure where the magic angle really works for this part, but it is a way to include John Constantine. And this is essentially a Constantine-Superman team-up. There are some other smaller arcs as well that concern Firestorm, Red Robin, and Shazam. They tend to weave in and out of the other stuff a bit more than being their own thing. Overall, I very much enjoyed Future's End. I read all of the issues within about 4 days. I can't compare it to reading them one by one, but it flowed really well. Certainly, with the sheer amount of stuff that's happening in the books, it didn't feel like any one storyline was taking up too much space or drawing attention away from the others. The plotting feels really well balanced. The highlights are probably the sort of storyline that involves Red Robin, his girlfriend Madison Payne and Firestorm. Cadmus Island is very interesting. There's a very odd character called 50 Sue. Very strange, quite funny, but also quite frightening at the same time. On the other hand, the terrible killer occult robot, and even Batman Beyond's early adventures don't stand out quite as well. But when we get to the final, 10, 15 issues, they zip together very tightly, and we get a nice, exciting climax, which involves both Brother Eye and this extraterrestrial threat, which attacks Stormwatch. If you have any interest in Convergence, or want to find out a bit more about the New 52 universe and its possible future, then I would recommend Future's End. It's very much a superhero weekly event book. If 52 didn't appeal to you, or you really hated Countdown, maybe approach this cautiously. Personally, I loved 52, and I didn't mind Countdown. I quite enjoyed that. So I'm going to sign off for now. Thank you for your time today, and I will be back soon with more Convergence.
It's worth mentioning that it's Free Comic Book Day on Saturday. If you are listening to this and you'd forgotten that it was Free Comic Book Day the way I had, please have a good and safe Free Comic Book Day. Your local comic shop is almost definitely doing something, listener. And I think Comixology probably are, if they're not already doing stuff, and nearly all of the comic companies are doing something cool. Our local Forbidden Planet is having apparently their biggest day ever. They've got more comics than they have before.
Wow.
And so I think some of us, I'm not sure who yet, and Jane and I will talk about that in a minute. I think some of us are going to be at the Forbidden Planet in Southampton. I know James isn't, and I'm not sure if I will be either.
I think Free Comic Book Day is a really good way to get someone who is shown an interest in comics, but maybe hasn't quite taken the fall yet. It's a good way to get a friend or a relative or a youngster involved. There's some really good, really, really good child-friendly books that come out on Free Comic Book Day. Yeah, loads. They are usually the best books as well. So absolutely, if you're near your comic book shop and you've got your friends and you think, yeah, I want them to be interested, or your nieces, nephews, kids, whatever, just take them along. It's really good fun. Get free stuff.
But try and get there early, because most of the stores run out of their free comics really quickly.
That's twice.
Yeah, in the past we've been really good about this, but it's like we've had other stuff going on.
I know. What's all this weird, real life crap? Stuff.
No. Boring, it's not comics.
Hello, we have issues. It's time for us to continue my history of manga. This is now part 3, where we're going to start heading into comics that started to come out after World War II and as the occupation was going on. But we kind of require a lot of context for this, which means we're actually going to kind of have this extended bit. I think it might end up being a couple of weeks. I'm literally going to just stop recording when I hit about 5 minutes and come back next week for the rest. But yes, it's going to be talking about war. And as with a lot of history relating to war, It's really hard to cover all the bases in an ethically fair way, especially when I'm an unsourced audio-based history. So we're going to kind of roll with that, take everything with a pinch of salt. I think I cover it in the first bit I speak about, but I'm just making sure it's said here again. This may not all be massively verified. I've tried to be as accurate as I can. I've tried to omit anything that might seem fatuous. With that said, let's talk about World War II. To understand the state of Japan as comics truly emerged as a creative outlet and popular medium, you kind of have to understand the things Japan had gone through and the things Japan had done in actual non-comics related history before the occupation of Japan post-World War II. This is hard. We're going to be talking war crimes and treading a dangerous ground here, especially for an audio format, free of citations and on the sort of time limit that doesn't allow full exploration of everything I mention here. So understand right now that whilst nothing I say here is necessarily untrue, it may lack some of the greater context to it that is really needed to fully understand world history, and that such a thing without that greater context to it can be a dangerous, dangerous thing. So I recommend following up this particular chapter in the history of manga with your own reading, and I will happily attempt to give you some good recommendations over at my Twitter, at maxi_barnard. Knowledge is power! Also, you know, according to a lot of Japanese officials, a lot of this stuff never actually happens. But hey, look at that. Nationalism is still a thing. More on that to come. From about the middle of the 19th century, Japan had been going to great lengths to catch up to the Western world. Something you can specifically trace to Matthew Perry, not that one, enforcing the opening of the then isolationist Japan beyond the small amount of business handled out of Nagasaki through means of shelling and intimidation, leading to Japan signing treaties that went vastly towards the US getting exactly what they wanted, and Japan having to adopt several Western philosophies. By which I mean they became the sort of problematic colonial power that would display their power through wars and unfair political treaty. What can I say? They learned from some of the best. A big part of this was something called the Meiji Restoration, which saw the shogun lose all their power in favour of the emperor, the sort of... This series, this history of manga, is in essence a big love letter to a single culture's use of one of the strongest visual mediums in the history of humankind. But it's at a time like this that it's really important to differentiate that from a love of the country itself. Because some stuff, a lot of stuff, when it comes to Japan, is super troubling. I mean, that's true of any significant country, but... Man, fuck the emperor, right? The emperor is this real... oddity of a concept, especially in Japan. This immutable face of the nation, an untouchable power said to be descended from the very gods themselves, at least until, yeah, the end of World War II, because of course that's the case. The emperor holds such sway over people that when push came to shove, Emperor Showa, the emperor for the majority of the 20th century, encouraged civilians to commit suicide when the Western forces were winning. People would throw themselves off cliffs in the name of the emperor. And whilst you can argue for all the good that this particular emperor did, he was not tried for war crimes. And for the most part, the real significant thing to come from his loss in World War II was that he had to actually declare that he was not this, I believe the specific term was incarnate divinity. That's fucked on so many levels, and will only seem more so when other events between then and the Meiji Restoration are bridged. Though of course, he was not the emperor at this point in time, and really the amount of power that the emperor had was mostly a ruse anyway, as the advisors to any given emperor held more sway over stuff than the emperor truly did. But yes, with this switch in power structure and philosophy came the want for power, and so Japan asserted itself through expansion, fighting for Korea and its many delicious natural resources with China in the First Sino-Japanese War, winning by some huge amount and establishing itself as an empire, with the soon-to-be-annexed Korea and Taiwan in its grasp. Then it beat Russia for the possession of the Liaodong Peninsula, as you do, as a militaristic power and as a country that currently believed that its military should be the dominant aspects of its social and political existence, both in itself and worldwide, Japan was looking good and allied itself with the Allies to help fight against Germany's own empire. And Germany lost, so that's good. The world learned some valuable lessons from the First World War, especially as to how imperialism and colonialism are dangerous things and basically risk starting wars all the time, and that, you know, maybe wars are bad, so maybe nations shouldn't be doing this sort of thing. Japan did not learn this lesson, because unlike Europe, it came out of the conflict looking pretty good, and so things continued on, much to the chagrin of the West, not wanting to see more conflict based on these dangerous practices. Japan didn't care too much, though, because they had no problem starting a second war with China. More on that next week.
I guess we should probably go.
Yes.
Thanks, listener, for listening. You are you listen. You've got ears that work.
Thank
oh
you.
God, that sounds awful.
No, thank you for choosing to use your ears with us.
Yes, thank you. That's very kind of you. The accessibility on this podcast awful, because if you can't hear, sounds like I'm making light of it, but actually it's just occurred to me how bad that is.
Oh.
If someone wants to write transcripts of these episodes, please get in touch with us on the internet. You can email us at issuespod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @issuespod as well. Jane on Twitter is...
Cover Jane.
And you're also on Instagram, you said earlier on, yes. And that was at...
@that_girl_Jane.
No underscore at the end.
No.
That's because you don't need it at the end.
No.
There's no need for it. And I haven't quite worked out Instagram yet, but you're on it now and Jesse's on it, so I'll have to start paying more attention to it.
Oh, Jesse's on it. Okay. Yep.
And I'm on Twitter @NickSite. There is a Facebook page. You can listen to all of the past episodes at wehaveissues.net. And you can also find us in your podcatcher of choice. Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Jane. I haven't seen you in ages. It's awesome.
And now, but we're in different rooms. It's really
odd. So I don't like it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which is better, the animal experimentation thing or the, I added animal. You didn't say animal experimentation or the prison thing.
Oh.
I'm kind of uncomfortable with the prison narrative for whole other reasons. But yes, it's very good to see you again. And, we'll be back, next week.
Bye.
Bye.